Tuesday, December 8th. It's Argus News Radio. News, culture, and life at Wesleyan University and beyond. I'm your host, Andrea Dominic. Hey, thanks so much for tuning in. Argus News Radio is a collaboration between WESU-FM in Middletown and Wesleyan student newspaper, The Argus. After a two-week break, The Argus is back. Let's catch up with some headlines. It may be time to say goodbye to a beloved institution of Wesleyan's campus. When the class of 2010 graduates this May, the memory of dining in McConaughey Hall will leave campus with them. This year's seniors are the last remaining students to have known the days of MoCon before the UZan University Center opened 2 years ago. MoCon and the vacant brick building adjacent to UZan and North College, which used to house squash courts, have been sitting unused for several years as the university considers new options for the spaces. Although many students have expressed a desire to keep the existing structure for alternative uses, the administration maintains that the most economically feasible option for MoCon is likely demolition. The squash courts, however, according to President Roth, will likely be used for academic purposes. No final decision's been made about demolishing MoCon, and I sure hope they don't go through with it. I had way too many greasy meals there as a freshman to want to see it go, and I kind of still think they should make it into an aquarium anyway. And speaking of May, the university will launch its new summer session at the end of the spring semester. The summer session is a two-year pilot program targeting Wesleyan students, and it was officially approved last month by both the faculty and the Educational Policy Committee. Slated to run from June 7th to July 9th, the session will offer a number of popular courses that many students have difficulty enrolling in during the regular academic year, in addition to several new courses. The summer session will also offer three thematic institutes, theater, psychology, and computer programming and music, which are taught by two professors and typically include two interconnected courses. The summer session is open to non-Wesleyan students, though administrators have said that the program's success depends upon the amount of participation from currently enrolled students. The summer session will cost $2,500 per full credit, with a half credit for labs, one credit for regular courses, and two credits for institutes. Limited financial aid will be available. The new program will be advertised in the coming months via emails to students and parents, posters in USDAN, and advertisements in the Argus. Next up, it's the latest in science innovations, both real and imaginary, with Scientific Banter Essentials, fresh from our pals over at WESU's own Scientific Banter. Hey.
Thanks, Andrea. I'm DJ Disingenuous.
And I'm MC Hall.
And these are your Scientific Banter
Essentials.
As the scientific community continues to seek low-impact energy alternatives to coal and oil, previously radical suggestions for new energy sources are now being considered more seriously. The Liberal Action Squad of Engineers and Revolutionaries, or LASER, has proposed a plan to be initiated right here in Connecticut. They've installed in the city of Hartford a silent disapproval consumptive nitrate particle generator, which will gather political corruption particles created by Senator Joseph Lieberman and coagulate the particles into clean-burning nitrate orbs. The only regret, according to LASER, is that Lieberman himself will sustain no bodily harm as a result of the process. When asked to comment on the potential benefits of his deplorable political behavior on the environment, Senator Lieberman opened his mouth to speak, but his voice was muffled by the cache of gold nuggets given to him by his friends in the pharmaceutical lobby that he had had hidden under his tongue. In response, the Republican Action Team, or RAT, has come up with its own proposal to meet emission standards set by the new administration. With Representative Joe Wilson at the lead, the plan intends to simultaneously cut taxes, increase defense spending, deport all illegal immigrants, and build foundations for a sustainable future. The solution to the environmental crisis, said Wilson, is right under our noses. By burning domestic elementary schools, post offices, homeless shelters, and museums, we can decrease our dependence on foreign oil by 60% for nearly 6 months. The bill faces opposition from teachers' unions, environmental NGOs, science, and other unmoneyed American institutions, so is expected to pass through Congress within the week.
In other news, we all know that there was a widespread panic about the beginning of the knots when Y2K rolled around. That controversy was the result of a carefully calculated public relations campaign initially conceived by the Bureau of Logistical Affairs of America and Surrounding Territories, or BLAST. This nonpartisan group carefully drew from psychological testing data to formulate precise levels of confusion, panic, apathy, and fear among the American people. The ensuing madness among the world's population, based on the fear that all computers and microwave devices would self-destruct at midnight of New Year's Day 2000, was carefully charted and measured by BLAST in conjunction with the U.S. government. BLAST has now released the document that details the scientific results of the world's collective dread. The peer-reviewed study is written in dense jargon that only a true scientist could read, but using our profound skill in doctorate degrees, DJ Disingenuous and I have decoded the science for the everyday layperson. In short, in the months leading up to Y2K, the world collectively emitted 4 billion concentrated radio proclivity particles, increasing the atmosphere's particle rate by as much as 62 parts per trillion. The average human being decreased calorie intake by 2.5%, resulting in the global proliferation of microsynthetic ectoglobular stomach lining. Some leading researchers theorize that this change in demographic layering is to blame for irritable bowel syndrome, Mars missions, acid reflux disorder, prenatal soccer player effect, and David Attenborough. Now, as 2010 rolls around, BLAST and its associated subcouncil, the Regency of Early Announcements for Logistical and Legal Interface, or REALLY, is getting ready to formulate its new plan for mass disruption and concern. How will the council decide to disrupt our everyday lives at the end of this decade? When the data are released, Scientific Banter will be here to help you understand what it all means.
This has been Scientific Banter Essentials.
Be sure to tune in to Scientific Banter every Wednesday night at 11 p.m. on WESU.
To conclude our segment, we will play for you a series of sounds recorded by NASA's Hubble Space Telescope.
Back to you, Andrea.
That was your weekly dose of Scientific Banter Essentials. Like what you're hearing? Show your support during WESU's 5th Annual Holiday Pledge Drive. Give us a call at 860-685-7700 and show us some love with a little donation. And now, back to Argus News Radio. And closing today's show is an Argus op-ed by arts editor Gabe Lesra. And he's got a thing or two to say about vampires, feminism, and the end of the world.
Today I did a persuasive speech in my speech class on why everyone should be on Team Jacob instead of Team Edwin, complete with pictures making my case. M-L-I-T. From mylifeistwilight.com. Normally, I'm not one to be worried about the corrupting influence of media on our youth and that nonsense, but the problem with Twilight is that the cultural messages that it transmits are bad enough that even if a tiny percentage of them get through, we're all in trouble. The cultural and social values that the films promote are so regressive that they would make people in Victorian London stand up and angrily defend the rights of women and minorities. So the film center on a protagonist, Bella, who is so incredibly devoid of personality that every tween girl can see themselves in her. As a friend of mine pointed out, for example, a girl would drop her pencil and say, "Oh my god, I'm clumsy, just like Bella." This is why websites like MyLifeIsTwilight.com exist, because Bella is nothing, and consequently, everyone is Bella. So Bella's depressed. That's her entire character. She has no redeeming feature, no personality characteristic that makes her in any way interesting. In fact, her identity is defined completely by the men who pursue her. Bella's being is tied to men. Outside of them, she is nothing, a lonely, depressed, boring girl. Honestly, hard to figure out why guys like her, other than her looks. She has no attitudes, no opinions, nothing, other than Edward and Jacob. The entire plot of the series rests on how Bella comes to be saved, used, and manipulated by men. The vampires and the werewolves are sideshows in the massive patriarchal carnival that is Twilight. Apparently, Bella has agency. She gets to choose which of the two men get to define her life, which man makes her being. There's a Team Edward, a Team Jacob, but no Team Bella. Why? Because Twilight tells our teens, a woman's duty is to choose which man to settle down with. And sex? Not until marriage. And the less you talk about it, the better. Though the more you can hint at it, the more your movie will sell. Twilight is a manifesto against premarital sex. Yet ironically, the main social good that the movie provides is its objectification of men. At every possible interval, Jacob removes his shirt, for example. The more men are objectified, the less social power they wield in their objectification of women. The sexual tone of Twilight serves to highlight the inherent racism and discourse of domination that the series provides. Werewolves, the minority savages, antagonize the vampires, the white aristocrats. All of this is, of course, superimposed on a narrative of patriarchal domination that has Bella, the female protagonist, used and abused like a rag doll throughout the series. She has to choose whether to civilize the animalistic werewolf who abuses her, the white man's burden, or to stick with the flighty white aristocrat who is likely to abandon her. The contrast between the primitive werewolves and the civilized, uptight vampires is symbolized by the way each culture responds to physical abuse. While Jacob and the werewolves physically abuse Bella and other girls, the vampires are extremely apologetic if she gets so much as a scratch. The savages are violent and the whites are civilized. White people are better than other people. This is exactly why people were upset about the casting of a black man to play a vampire. They simply couldn't see a black man being culturally superior to a white. So where does all of this leave us? Bella is an object, Edward is a white cultural oppressor, and Jacob is an unruly savage. They all objectify each other and are themselves objectified by the series itself. The series justifies the white man's burden, the patriarchal domination of women, and the repression of sexuality. While a discourse of sexuality still goes on even if it's not talked about, the discourse is using the wrong language. Bella is not a person. Is she really the thing that our tween girls should model themselves on? Aren't we tacitly accepting these disgusting cultural morals by aiding and abetting the distribution of their message? What team are you on?
That was Argus Arts editor Gabe Lezra. And that wraps it up for this week's edition of Argus News Radio. Our lovely staff are producers Sam Bernhard and Mary Longley, DJ Disingenuous and MC Hall from Scientific Banter, contributor Gabe Lezra, and me, your host, Andrea Dominic. Be sure to catch us again next week, same Argus time and same Argus place, 2:45 p.m. on Tuesdays, right here on WESU-FM. Or if you'd like to get another earful of today's show, you can catch us online anytime on the Argus' website. That's www.wesleyanargus.com. See you next week, and thanks for tuning in.